Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning, I'm Charlie Herman. With me today, WNYC contributors Joan O'Sara with The New York Times and Rana Faruhar with Time Magazine. And I want to start this morning talking about the stock market. The Dow is at the highest levels that we've seen since 2007. If the trend continues, we might soon see a record. And this is happening at the same time that we're about to see huge cuts to federal spending, the sequester. It's like the markets, though, are saying, meh, sequester, no big deal. What do the markets know that we don't?
Well, I think that we've got two different realities going here. We've got the markets and we've got the real economy. And that's been the case for a number of years now. Now, why is that? It's because the markets are reacting to the Federal Reserve propping up asset prices. All of these buys of bonds and mortgage-backed securities that they've been doing over the last few years has raised the markets. It's been incredibly successful. But that hasn't changed the revenues of companies or the income that people have or the reality in the underlying economy. And that's the disconnect that you're seeing.
You know, Joe, we've been warned that we could drive over a cliff, we could hit a ceiling, or we could end up shutting down the government. None of that's happened. And in fact, during the case of all the threats and the worries, if you decided I'm not going to invest or take money out, you would have lost money. So maybe these people, maybe the market has it right.
Charlie, how do you spell bubble? This is a classic bubble that is going to burst. Rana is completely right. What is driving this is not the real economy. It's the actions of the Federal Reserve. That's point number one. Point number two, it is incredible that the sequester, which is going to take somewhere around little less than 2% out of GDP at a time when the gross domestic product isn't growing very much and everybody's shrugging their shoulders and saying it's not going to affect the stock market, are nuts. If this thing lasts 2 or 3 weeks, and just take one example, people are at the airport and they're standing in line for 2 hours instead of 15 minutes, that will have an effect on their psyche, and it will say something about where the markets go.
All right, I'm going to jump in here and disagree slightly with Joe. Markets move for a couple of reasons. They move when underlying revenues get better, also when people's expectations are better. Now, I think the bottom line is this is a very unique bubble because it's not driven by the fact that these companies are somehow making up income or the asset value is actually divorced from the underlying cash flows. It's about the Fed. When the Fed says it'll stop buying bonds, if it does that abruptly, you're going to see some market movement there. But if it exits from this asset buying program the last few years in an orderly way, if it's able to do that, I don't think this is a bubble that's going to burst, at least not all at once.
But Rana, the truth is that the price of many of these companies is actually very divorced from their income and their revenues. And so the idea that this can last forever is not realistic. Eventually, the Fed will stop doing what it's doing. And I don't even think it'll be that eventually. People will realize that stock prices are too high and it'll come tumbling down.
What is that going to look like? What does a bubble bursting look like?
I think that what's going to happen is it's not going to be a kind of a dot-com bubble bursting. It's certainly not going to be a financial crisis scenario. I think what you're going to see is companies that get their income from the American consumer, whose median income has been stagnant for 4 years, are going to not look so great when the whole quantitative easing program of the Fed ends. I think that companies that are getting their income from emerging markets that are still growing pretty fast from overseas markets are going to do okay. So I think it's going to be a very mixed picture.
Well, let me shift to another topic this week. Marissa Mayer, the CEO of Yahoo, she's been getting a lot of criticism, in particular from women, about her decision to end telecommuting and work from home policies. But there's also this perspective that she's trying to change the culture at Yahoo, that she's trying to get people together to make it more innovative and to make the company more successful. Rana, does that give her too much of a benefit of a doubt?
Well, you know, I feel for Marissa Mayer, frankly, because, you know, if she was a male CEO, let's be honest, her every movement around not just work-family policy, but almost anything she does wouldn't be so carefully watched and criticized. I do think that Yahoo is an incredibly dysfunctional company. It's been very badly run. That's no secret. It's been a huge turnaround story. So I can imagine that she, as part of her crackdown and turnaround, wants to get things in order, wants to stop people that are sort of sitting at home, you know, drawing salaries and not doing much, get them back in the office. That said, I do think that the work at home trend is something that's here to stay. A lot of research shows that people are more productive. I think it depends on what kind of jobs you're doing, though. I'm a writer. I work at home a lot. I think if I was in a more collaborative organization, you know, who knows if it would work as well.
Joe, you're telecommuting with us today. What's your take on this?
You know, Rana, you have a sense of urgency in your work because you have to meet these hard deadlines every week. Mm. And I have to meet these hard deadlines a couple of times a week. So we have urgency built in. But to create a sense of urgency at Yahoo, I think she feels like people need to be in the office and they need to have a powerful sense of how much is at stake. And I basically think people should, at a place like Yahoo that's really sinking, have to earn the right to work at home. And that as important it is for people to have family time and so on, the bottom line is this company will not survive if the people who work there don't feel a deep, deep commitment and need to make it work. And I'm kind of with her on this.
Well, let's look ahead to the stories that we're watching next week. Rana, what's on your radar?
So I'm thinking about Apple. It's just been in the news for almost everything in the last few months. There's a big suit from the activist investor David Einhorn that's been successful. He's pushing for Apple to have to pay out more of its cash hoard. It's got something like $137 billion on its balance sheet. That's about 7% of all of corporate America's liquid assets. Now you have shareholders complaining that pay is too high. It's a very interesting story, and I think it's going to say a lot how things shake out about what companies are there to do. Are they there to make money for shareholders? Are they there to create jobs? Apple's come under pressure for not employing enough people in America. So I think that what happens to this company in the next few weeks and months is going to be fascinating.
It's always the danger of becoming number one.
Exactly.
And everyone's out for you.
Exactly.
Joe, what are you looking at?
Rana, this has never happened before in the times we have done this show. But I was also struck by Apple's annual meeting this week in which CEO Tim Cook basically shrugged off everybody's complaints, including that of David Einhorn. This case, Einhorn is right. Apple has so much cash, it doesn't know what to do with it, and it should give some back to the shareholders.
Well, we'll be watching those stories and all the week's financial news at WNYC.org/business. You can also take this program with you as a podcast available on iTunes. As always, my thanks to Rana Faruhar with Time Magazine and Jonah Serra with The New York Times.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talking from WNYC.